Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is the Investor Resources live radio program. Live means we have an open phone line. The magic number to get in and talk with us is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. You want to discuss something about the stock market, your portfolio, recommendation given to you by your friendly neighborhood financial advisor, who more than likely is not a fiduciary, but whose job is to keep you happy so you don't move your account to a fiduciary, somebody who actually looks out for you instead of just coming up with, well, the boss told me this was a good deal, so let's see how much of it we can sell.
Today.
I remember those.
Yeah. Yeah. Move this today.
Yeah, I remember those days when I was working with EF Hutton. In fact, that was one of the reasons I quit working at Hutton, because every month the manager came in and said, okay, our product this month is XYZ. This is how it works. And this is what you're going to sell. When you get done with that, we don't care what else you sell, but get this one moved because, you know, we got all we need of it and we need to get our money back. That is the system. Now, it's a little more sophisticated than in the days where limited partnerships and tax shelters were the primary motivation for investors. But the process is still the same. It's just a little harder to figure out. And if that's happening to you, you think it's happening to you, then you can give us a call. You can even call us during the week. We have a phone number that works all week long.
It's amazing.
No, except nobody answers it on the weekend. That's not totally true because it does forward over to our cell phones. So if we, you know, if you call us even on the weekend, we're likely to pick it up. That magic number is 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. And if you don't get our week in review, which normally goes out on Mondays, you can send us an email, help@iriradio.com. That's help. It's a four-letter word. Brings you a lot of information. help@iriradio.com. And we have our next beginning of the month webinar scheduled for June 5th at 9:15, right after the show. You register at iriradio.com. So I think that's all the promo messages I parried. Did I miss anything?
No, that should do it. I think you covered the bases there.
You did a lot of show prep, but while I was reviewing that and just kind of cleaning up my email, I ran across some stuff about real estate market. And you know the real estate market has been hot.
Sure thing, especially around here.
And there's one of the big discussions in the financial arena is whether or not current Fed policy, which has been in place since 2009, is actually creating income disparity, which means the wealthy are doing a lot better and the poor, not so much. And the Fed, of course, says our objective is to improve the employment situation and reduce wealth disparity. However, there's some disagreement within the Fed.
As always, sure.
Dallas Fed President, who is Robert Kaplan, has been interviewed a number of times, and talking about the housing market, and he's kind of talking out of line here. He's saying, well, one of the things that caused the market to tank for a day this last week was the Fed had mentioned that they were internal discussions about tapering. Talking about tapering sooner than they had expected to talk about tapering all their purchases in the bond market. And basically what Mr. Kaplan has said is that we're in a position where families are being squeezed out of the housing market and unable to buy their first home. Well, that's a response to, there's a whole lot of people who are just buying up houses as investments. They didn't like what happened in stocks last year. They've got cash, so they come in as cash buyers paying more than the asking price, which is bidding up the prices for the next house on comparable sales. Somebody else is saying, that's a lot of money for that house. Maybe I'll sell mine. And the net result is Mr. Kaplan says, maybe our policies are creating the problem. Voila! Who'd have thunk it? It's about time they started doing a little self-examination here. These high prices are actually causing people who have bought a second home and moved into it, holding the old one because price appreciation has just been phenomenal this last year.
Demand is high, and with the Fed keeping interest rates low, there's a lot of people that can buy another house, and they're doing it. And, you know, it's once the imbalances begin to show up, that's when you really have to start to think about the policy you have in place. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago I read that for the first time in 15 years, existing home, the average price of an existing home surpassed the average price of a new home. So that's how much those houses are getting bid up. It's in fact, right now, you know, any home, anything that hits the market is just getting absorbed immediately. And a lot of that is people are leaving the cities. And a lot of that is now's the time to buy. Interest rates are still way low on a historical basis, even though they bumped a little bit. It's still not enough to slow down the housing market. And it just that just keeps grinding forward, grinding higher. Prices just keep increasing.
But it does have a downside to it. And then as prices go up and people decide to start selling those homes, they're already in a new home. They're not buyers. They just have an extra property to sell. And so the supply of homes over this next year should begin to increase, which is going to moderate prices. So if you have a home to sell, just maybe you've got an extra property or two hanging around on your balance sheet, you might pay attention. Think about getting it ready to sell. In fact, the number of people getting ready to sell is increasing according to the data. So that kind of leaves the situation of what do you do when the music stops? You know, it happens. Well, I remember it happening in junior high school when we played musical chairs. That was a long time ago. I don't know if they still do that anymore. That's probably inappropriate in the new school regime. But in any event, good things always come to an end. That will happen in the real estate market at some point in time. But if you have properties to sell, you already have a home, you might pay attention to the increasing number of listings, which may mean prices will be rolling over, at least softening. But that happens in the stock market too. Fear of lower prices happens in the blink of an eye. It's called FOMO, fear of missing out. I have watched prices rise, and I'm just waiting for a good time to buy. Oh, and then prices suddenly drop. And now if I put my money in the market, am I going to lose it?
Yeah, people are always worried about, you know, prices take the stairs on the way up, but they take the elevator on the way down. So it's always that drop always tends to be quicker. And that's the part that really gets everyone's attention. Once prices start to fall, boy, the fear that builds up so quickly because, oh, my goodness, what do you know? There is risk here. There is risk in this market, as there is in every market. But as soon as those prices start to drop, that's when people begin to realize, oh, I see, this can affect my portfolio, and it can affect it today. This is not a long-term thing. This is going to happen now, and that's when people really start to rethink what they're doing with their portfolios. And that's when you can make really bad decisions because anything based in fear is not going to head you in the right direction.
And there's plenty of things that can cause fear. I did not know there was a company called Lemonade. Did you know that?
No. No, but there, like I said, there's a lot of companies out there. So.
It's in the insurance business. I don't know what lemonade and insurance have to do to go together. There's Plug Power and, of course, Virgin Galactic we've heard about.
You bet.
But all these are down 60% from recent highs. And people think that, yeah, I own this stock, but I'll get out before it collapses. Well, you know, this is just a temporary setback, and the company's a good company. It'll work. It'll work at a lower price, too, and that often happens. So what happens when you have a big winner, and we talk to these individuals from time to time where they're up maybe well over 100% with something they've owned a long time, and they just assume that's the way things are supposed to work.
It's on its way to 200% up now, right? And not always. So.
All of a sudden, it's down 50. Well, you know, that wasn't supposed to happen. What do I do now? Well, sometimes you just roll over and go back to sleep. That's often what people do because there's real no plan to protect capital. And it's a lot more important to protect capital so that you don't have to go out and work longer than you expected.
And you really have to have that plan in place. That's really the key. If you have a big winner, what are you going to do with it? How long are you going to hold it? What's your target? What would cause you to sell it? You need to have that all sorted out before anything happens. Because after it starts, if we do get a big drawdown, if prices are falling, especially in a security that you own a big gain in, you have to know what you're going to do before that happens. That's not the time to start thinking about, when do I want to sell this? You're not going to be thinking clear at all at that time. You're going to be in a mild or severe panic about, hey, what's going on? This is going the wrong direction. What should I do? You need to already have that in place. You need to have already made those decisions.
That's one of the reasons that we do these monthly webinars is, one, bring you up to date, give you another perspective of the market than just, you know, the market always goes up. You know, forget about it. You know, go home. Don't bother me. That's kind of the message you get from most financial advisors. You're in it for the long haul, right? Yeah, well, you know, we aren't short-term traders here, and neither are we, as a matter of fact. But the webinars are designed to bring you up to date on how we're looking at market conditions, and then how do you deal with market pullbacks? Because you don't want to lose capital. Some of these are short-term and should be ignored. But what do you do when that changes? How do you know when it changes? Well, we try to bring some clarity to that because what we do is not rocket science. It is just simply math on a graph. I like that.
That's
math on a graph.
There you go.
Yeah. Can we trademark that?
Probably. You probably need to get on it now, though. So it'll be taken by the end of the show. So.
But math on a graph tells you a lot of information about what's going on with investors' concepts of the market or a particular security. And so we do these webinars, and the next one is June 5th. You can register for it now. If you don't register for it in advance, it's a little harder to be there. Anyway, it is IRIradio.com. IRIradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website, couple of clicks, your email and your name, and you are going to be in. And if you cannot attend, as long as you've registered, we'll send you a replay link, and you can watch it on your own time when there's nothing on TV that you think is worth squat.
We can save you. We are against our first break here, Don. I'd like to remind everyone, if you have questions this morning, feel free to give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. And if you don't feel like being on the radio, you can send us an email. Send your question this morning on email. We check that at the break. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help@iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only strong spy. Only
Well, that's true. Only the strong survive. Just like I mentioned in the last segment, the Virgin Galactic Lemonade insurance business. I've never heard of it before. Take a 60% hit in your stock price, and you start wondering, will this survive? But then if you're a value buyer, or you just think you can get it at a better price, because you'll buy on the next pullback. Of course you will.
That's one of the most famous plans. You know, I got to wait for this market to drop so I can get back in. Right now I can't buy. It's too high. So
there are countless people who've told themselves they were going to buy Bitcoin the next time they got an opportunity to do so at lower prices.
Yeah.
And boy, those lower prices happened this week. They're, you know, I bet frankly most of them were too scared. When you drop from 60,000 to 40,000 to 30,000, that's a 50% drop in a week. Hey, there's a value buy.
It's the perfect buying opportunity, but most people just can't pull it together and say, yes, I should get into this right now. It's lost 50% of its value in a week. I should buy some. It never happens that way.
So if you're too scared to buy on the way up, you're definitely too scared to buy on the way down.
Almost always, sure.
Yeah, so that's the I'll buy on the next pullback syndrome. So prices don't fall 30% for no reason. There's always a reason. They never have fallen for without a reason, and they never will. There's always a reason. The difficulty is the reasons are often not known for months, sometimes years, before we figure out what the real cause of a major decline can be pegged to. So the issue in the meantime is the normal mantra, we're in here for the long haul. Just, you know, it's buy and hold, because you're going to miss out on the best days of the market if you try to get out and save your cash. You'll never get back in. That's the storyline you've been fed. Nobody ever talks about the other side, which is how much better off you would be if you didn't take those big losses. So along with buy low, sell high, which everybody wants to do, you've been told that's the right way. That's true. But with that, the corollary is you must sell high in order to buy low. And that's exactly what we have done with our portfolios with these last several major sell-offs in the market, particularly last year. And even in our, it's not automated, but our very systematic, let's call it mechanical trading processes that we use in our 401k plans, our 401k plan participants, those are the employees of the company whose 401k plans we are responsible for overseeing and running models, they missed it. Normally, you're sad when you miss out. They missed the big drawdown last year when the market fell 34% in 6 weeks. And that's because of discipline, process, doing what needs to be done when the math on the graph says you're out of time. And yet most of you who are not clients listening to us don't have a process to do that. They basically, as one caller that I spoke with this last week said, oh, but I've been with these guys so long. Yeah, I know they don't do that. And I don't like having to wait years to recover. But this last time, it didn't take years. So maybe next time, it won't be 7 or 10 or 15 years. Like
maybe
the
it's going to be
bubble.
Okay, but it's important to remember that if you do have that pie chart portfolio, if you do have that advisor who's a modern portfolio theory person, you've got your asset allocation portfolio, that's where it's going to stay. And if you're losing 35% of your money, that's the way it's supposed to work. It's actually working correctly at that point. You're supposed to lose the money. They're not supposed to do anything about it except try to talk you into not leaving, and that's it. There's not any safety in that graph. There's no safety in that kind of diversification. Some things go down fast. Some things go down slower, but it's all going down. And our whole strategy is completely different. If everything's going down, don't own it right now. don't own it right now. That'll stop. It always does. It's going to recover. And once that recovery begins, look for where the strength is and buy some of that. But don't just sit and get rolled over. But that's the whole concept. You have to have that plan down ahead of time. You have to have those rules down in advance so that when that drawdown hits, you know what you're going to do. And then it's just you just execute the plan. You don't wonder about what should I do or should I do anything. You know what you should do, and it just comes down to execution. And once you know what to do, it's much easier to actually do it. Then if your biggest decision is, hey, what should I do now? But my advisor is telling me, well, no, don't do anything. You know, just take the loss and live with it, because that's their plan. That's the way their plan actually works. Just take the loss, and then we'll wait as long as it takes for it to recover. We don't really care how long it takes to recover. That's not part of our process. We're just going to wait.
So if you read a lot of financial books over your lifetime, you've probably run across Richard Feynman's name. Well known in the business. One of his greatest quotes is, you must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool. So don't be a fool. Have a plan. If you don't have one, we do, and we'll be glad to explain it to you. We will give you part of that plan. We don't go through the whole process every month, but we do touch on some of the key factors that are critical to protecting capital when markets correct or crash, which is much more important. Short-term corrections, not so much. They're pretty normal in the market, but crashes, they destroy your financial security, cause a great deal of anxiety, and if you're in retirement, frankly, you cannot afford to go through another bear market and wait normally 5 to 10 years just to get even, which means you're not going to use any of the money in the meantime. Once it crashes, you stop using the money. Otherwise, you never will recover and you run out of money. And that becomes a serious problem in retirement. You mentioned, Perry, just a moment ago in your comments, you mentioned the diversification in modern portfolio theory.
Sure.
The major diversification and risk management is to buy another losing asset, bonds.
And you're buying them for safety, right? That's why they're in your portfolio. That's supposed to be the safe part of your portfolio. And right now, the risk in bonds is huge. I mean, there's almost no return, and rates are almost certainly going to trend up, not down from where we are, which means bond prices are going to fall even more. And that's the safety portion of your portfolio? You know, I'd like to see that on a graph sometime. Show me how that works. And the answer is, of course, plain and simple. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. There's no safety there right now.
So far this year, your safe haven, and all of those of you who have broadly diversified portfolios, and the older you are, the more they tell you you need more bonds because they're safe. So far this year, the aggregate iShares Barclay Bond Fund, which is an index fund, has generated a negative return of a little over 3.25%. So while stocks were going up, bonds were going down. When stocks went down this week, bonds went down more. I mean, it's interesting that what was supposed to be an inverse correlation, stocks go up, bonds go down, stocks go down, bonds go up. Well, that's not working the way it used to. Markets have changed over the last 10 years, but selling the concept of diversification and selling the concept that the older you get, the more bonds you need is just what we've been programmed to believe. Now, bonds worked when interest rates were falling. The 10-year treasury rate used to be 13%. Now it's 1.6. It's taken 35 or so years to get there. When rates fall, bonds go up in value. Now, with that history, which makes the models look good, you have to ask, will interest rates fall 90% in the next 30 plus years? And will I live long enough to watch that happen? if you don't think interest rates will fall another 90% in your lifetime, then your plan for defense by adding bonds makes no sense.
It can't work. It's just math. It cannot work. And that's the one of the dangers of basing your portfolio on long-term historical averages. If you're looking back over the last 50 or 80 years, that bond number is perfectly legitimate. If you look at what's going on in the market today, it's not even close to the return level that it needs to be for that. If you're in a 60-40 stock to bond percentage in your portfolio, which so many people are, that 40% in bonds is going to return nowhere near what it has over the past 50 years. Not even going to be close. And it can't be for right now. So you know that portfolio is not going to work, but they're not going to change. They're happy to wait another 80 years for that to work out. They literally will wait another 80 years for it to work out.
So the relationship of bonds and stocks has flipped upside down. And part of this is the inflation fear, and maybe that's transitory, but then maybe it's not. That's still a debatable issue in the financial markets, and most anywhere else anybody wants to talk about it. Depending if, you know, particularly if you're a gold salesman, then it's not transitory. It's about time that inflation caught up with stuff.
It's always a good time if you're a gold salesman, right? Now's the time to buy.
So long bonds as a hedge to protect in a down market really worked well during the Goldilocks era of stable growth and stable inflation. But now we're coming out of this pandemic response area, and the old dynamic simply no longer applies. Inflation is the volatility catalyst. And if you're not going to use bonds, which aren't working, and personally we believe are not likely to be a good hedge against market volatility in the future, you need another strategy. That's why we don't use modern portfolio theory and try to sell you the same old story.
It gets too disconnected. It gets too disconnected from what's going on in the market today, and that's what we address. We address what's going on today. The other thing going on is we're out of time for this segment. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'd like to remind everyone that our next market update is on the calendar for Saturday, June 5th, 9:15, right after the show here. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. Just go to the webinar page, give the registration link a click. You'll get a link back, and on June 5th, just click that link. You'll be live online with us. We'll be here to talk about the markets, the economy, and we always have plenty of time to get your questions in. Questions about the market or questions about individual securities, send us the ticker symbols even before the webinar, and we will cover all those during the webinar. We always have we take as much time as we need to get to everyone's question. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Make it higher. That's what everybody wants, just higher prices. It's just to get higher prices, disruption comes along. The president says something, the Fed says something, the Treasury Secretary says something, somebody overseas who's a big wig in their country says something, and all of a sudden, pitter-patter goes my heart, and investors jump out of their financial windows and start selling. Prices don't go up when there are no buyers. And when buyers leave, there's still people who need to liquidate for non-panic reasons, and they're forced to sell for their reasons at much lower prices. The question is always, is this temporary or permanent? And most investors today believe that every sell-off is temporary because generally, with a new set of millennials coming to the market as investors, they believe the story that stocks always go up, just give me more. Americans can't get enough of the stock market for a variety of reasons. And I mentioned lemonade in the last segment. I was just curious what the real numbers were on it. And from peak to trough, which just is over the last year, because this is not a long time because it hasn't been listed for very long,
sure,
is a drop of 64, almost 65%. But it's recovering because it's now down only 57% from its high. So as a buy and hold investor, that should not be a concern. As we look at the market, that should be a very big concern because you have absolutely no idea how long it's going to take to get whole. And it's more important to not lose capital, because if you lose capital, you don't have anything to put back in the market to recover. And if you have a bad position in your portfolio, it doesn't mean it will ever get healthy in your lifetime.
There are plenty of examples of companies that have taken the big hit and then they don't recover and then they disappear. If you're buying individual stocks, it's not uncommon for them just to close up and leave. And all of a sudden they're not listed anymore and your money's gone. It happens on a regular basis, and it's not one of the things people like to talk about because that adds an additional level of risk. What if the company that I'm invested in just stops being a company? And it happens.
Hertz comes to mind. Hertz is also an exception because normally when they end up in bankruptcy and get bought out by somebody who really wants the company, the people who've been betting on its survival usually get washed out. In the case of Hertz, they did not get entirely washed out. The Reddit traders did manage to get a little bit of the money back, but that's a rarity. Companies lose and lose and lose. They go to bankruptcy to reorganize. They just can't get their act together. And so a vulture basically comes in and says, okay, I'll give you 5 cents on the dollar. No, three.
And their plan, their plan's usually not to resurrect the company either. They're going to buy it. They're going to buy what's left, sell whatever parts are valuable, and shut her down. And that's it. You know, that's how they get vaporized. And they're not coming in to bring back the firm. They're coming in to sell off any assets that might hold any value at all, and move on.
So actually, with regard to the American investor, households have actually increased their stock exposure to 41% of total financial assets as of the last month. And that's the highest level on record, according to J.P. Morgan and Chase & Company. And they have data going back to 1952, and this includes 401k accounts, because that's obviously a significant portion of many people's financial
assets.
That's
where they're buying. That's where they're buying stocks, sure.
That's right. And the S&P's hit 25 new records this year. We have stellar earnings coming out of Death Valley last year.
Really good numbers right now. That's right.
So the real test is going to be what happens in the next quarterly earnings season. Actually, they're still be coming off of fairly low numbers from last year. And the problem that we're facing is that with all the money that government has borrowed from anybody they could find who's willing to give the U.S. Treasury money and then distribute it to households who, for the most part, did not have to suffer a great deal of pain. Not that it was easy, but without additional unemployment income or just additional, hey, we close the business, we close the economy down, and we don't know how it's going to work. So here's some money. Please don't vote us out of office. You know, you need some more money. Here's some more money. Please don't vote us out of office. Created an environment where households could keep on buying the things that they needed or wanted.
And right now, and one of those things is stocks.
That's true.
I read a piece this week that over the last 12 months, from the low of March in 2020, it's been the best 12 months in the history of the U.S. stock market. Best 12 months ever. 96% of all listed stocks are profitable over that 12-month period. 96% of stocks went up, which means you would have to try very hard to have lost money in the stock market. So that's why there's that pervasive feeling right now that, hey, I know how to make some extra money, and I happen to have one. Thanks for that stimulus check. I'll go to the stock market. Everything's going up. That's not normal. It's not even close to normal. And so those people who have just started investing and just started buying equities as fast as they could are buying in an environment where they almost couldn't lose. That's not going to last. The stock market's going to normalize, and just like everything else after this pandemic, and there's going to be a lot more. It's going to be a lot more difficult to be on the positive end of returns than it has for the last year.
Well, and the government assumed that if they put money in the household budget, that it would get spent on whatever people want to spend money on, and that would keep some businesses going. But it actually had two unintended consequences, one of which has been the nemesis of the Fed, and that is that people have been paying off debt. Those who didn't absolutely need the money for survival have turned around and said, let's get rid of the credit card debt. Let's pay down our mortgage. Let's build up our bank savings again. It doesn't pay a lot, but at least we've got something better than nothing in the bank. And that money was supposed to stimulate the economy, not so much. The second one is the unintended consequences that we spent a whole lot of money buying things that we otherwise would not have been able to buy if it had not been for government largesse. So now, what are we going to do with the next 2 and 3 years when, as the employment numbers improved, are they actually going to be buying things again that they've already bought because they had surplus cash from the government? Well, that's another question that is not yet resolved. Yeah, I see the call on the screen. So we have Glenn from Snohomish. Glenn, you're on the air with Don and Perry.
Hi, good morning. Hey, got a quick question for you guys. I know you guys play you're conservative and you're for wealth preservation, but I'm curious to know, what are your guys' returns in your portfolios? I believe you have two different portfolios that you guys typically use. What is the return for your year-to-date, and what was your return for 2020?
Well, the returns, we benchmark against a balanced account, and we don't publish a return because they're not audited, and so it's a violation of SEC rules to state performance that has not been audited. But we benchmark against a balanced account, because we don't have anybody who comes to us and says, I want to be 100% in stocks all the time, in which case that person should just buy the Vanguard S&P 500 fund or somebody's S&P 500 fund. There's no purpose for us. What I can tell you is that we have continued to outperform that balanced approach because of asset preservation in down markets. That's the major benefit of knowing how to protect capital. We do send out our monthly 401k model performance to plan participants because they have a right to know how the models work. And I can tell you that those models, without exception, exceeded the market in all the terms that you the time periods that you just asked about. And we follow those same processes in our client accounts.
By exceeding the market, you're referring to exceeding the S&P 500 or which market?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Okay. All right. The S&P 500. So you've exceeded the S&P 500 both year-to-date and in 2020.
And that is the case.
Okay. Good. That's good to know. Thank you.
You have a great day.
And that'll take us. That'll take us right out, Don. We can go ahead and get right off here. If you've that does leave a phone line open. If you guys need to get in, give us a call this morning at 888-312-5757. That's 888 312-5757. And another reminder that our June market update is coming up on June 5th, 9:15, right after the show. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. And if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, just send us an email. Send it to help at IRIradio.com. That is help at IRIradio.com. We just need your first and last name, and just put Week in Review in the subject line, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. Stay with us here. We'll be right back.
I made a comment that I want to come back and address. He said, I know you guys are conservative, and that is, well, we are part of the time, and we don't fit into the standard process. The standard process is to ask you 10 to 20 questions, each of which have a numeric value assigned to them. And once you're through answering those questions, the financial advisor or the website you're on adds them up and, based on 80 years of historic returns, builds a pie chart portfolio for you, so that the older you get, the more bonds they put in it. Now, we don't have anything against bonds when bonds make money. We just don't think they belong in your portfolio all the time. Our view is the stock market should be viewed more like a football field, where on one end of one goalpost is all stocks, and on the other end is all cash. The play happens between the 30-yard lines most of the time, and then every now and then it runs to the goal on one end or the other. So there are times where we are 100% in stocks, as we are now, and that by definition is an aggressive portfolio. Our 90-year-plus widows are all stocks, and so are their grandkids whose accounts we have. Last year, in February and March and a good portion of April, we didn't own any stocks. And in a good portion of that, we were in cash. Our 90-year-old widows and their grandchildren, who are much, much younger, were all cash. They were very conservative. We are a conservative manager when risk makes no sense. When bonds make no sense, we own stocks, or maybe stocks and bonds don't make sense, and we own cash. That's a function of math on the chart. When the math on the chart says, this is really screwy, what do you think you're doing? Well, we're going to go to safety.
We're going to make a change. And the important thing is, it's not based on your age. Your age should have nothing to do with the portfolio construction. Nothing. It doesn't matter if you're 6 or 106. If the risk is really high, you shouldn't be in the market. If the risk is really low, you should be in the market. But it's not based on how old you are. It's based on what the market data says. And those questions never get asked when they're building that pie chart portfolio. It's only questions, touchy-feely questions about how you feel about the market. That really doesn't matter one bit, unless you're just working with a salesperson trying to sell you something. They're trying to figure out how to sell you something. That's what that risk return questionnaire is. How should we present this to them? How should we try to sell them on this idea? And we're the opposite. We're like, we don't care how you feel about the market. We're going to tell you what the market is telling us about what's going on out there and where to best deploy your capital for realistic returns. After we look at the risk involved, is it even safe to be in the market or not? And that's an analysis that will never happen with the pie chart. It's always time to be in the market, and it's always time to buy more. It's never time to sell anything. That's backwards to us.
And you don't get there listening to the media, because recently, this past week, from the media, stocks have the worst day since January. Oh, my goodness. The worst day in 4 months.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's time to change your allocation. You should be scared now. Holy cow. Worst day in 4 months. We have to remember that the media is not here to tell you how to run your account, though I have Fox Business on most of the day running in the background. And one of the lead comments from each of the hosts is, and I'm here to make you money. you listen to my show and you're going to be implied, great wealth will come your way because we have the inside scoop. Well, the inside scoop is stocks had the worst day since January. My goodness, it's time. What are you doing? How are we going to protect ourselves? Their job's not to make you wealthy. Their job is to make you watch their show so they can ramp up advertising fees. And you have to keep that in perspective. Our job is we don't want to lose money. We want the accounts to grow, but we don't want to close our eyes and pretend everything's coming up roses. Because that's not reality.
It's never reality, and everything's never coming up the same way it did yesterday, which is, you know, that's the pie chart portfolio. Well, let's look at the past, see what happened, and pretend that that's going to happen again in the future. Not likely, not likely. The world is changing fast. Investment markets are changing even faster, and you need to adapt to what's going on currently and not what happened 20, 30, 50 years ago. That doesn't matter.
So having the market down 2.5% is not time to panic, because normal fluctuation on the downside is 7 to 10%, happens almost every year. The issue is, what are the underlying, and what else should you look at to figure out whether or not that it should impact your decisions? Our decisions are based on leadership. Do the positions we own show signs of continued upward advance? When that comes to an end, something else is leading, and that's what should be in your portfolio. The standard diversification is we own a whole bunch of stuff and we're just going to hang on to it. We've already taken care of the next bear market by loading you up on bonds, which are losing money, but they're not losing that much. So in theory, when the stocks go down and you lose a lot, the bonds will, they'll kind of soften it for you, but yeah, they can go down too. But you're in here for the long haul. Well, the long haul, in our opinion, is don't lose money in major market declines. Step aside. How do you determine that? Leadership. You just look at returns. And when the whole market is losing money and everything is below cash, we're just asking, why do you own stuff that you know is losing money? Let's get rid of it. Even if you like it, you can buy it back at a lower price if you have cash, and you're letting your cash dissipate.
It's not
disappear.
Gone. Things that we get rid of in our portfolio aren't gone forever. We've had bonds in our portfolios before. We'll have bonds in our portfolios again. Right now, bonds just don't make any sense. So there's no place for a permanent allocation to anything if you can't say there's a really good chance we're going to make money here, because that's why we all invest. We all invest for a positive return. If that's not going to happen, we don't want to keep it. But that's not what happens in that pie chart. The pie chart is just buy it, hold it, and forget about it for long enough that maybe it will have come back by then. And instead of doing that, we follow the trend. We follow the money. That's how you follow the strength in the market. And, you know, more, we say it all the time, more importantly than following the strength is avoiding the weakness in the market. That's where you really get hurt. And that's the other part that pie chart doesn't address. If they own things that are really, really weak and really taking a big loss, they'll buy some more. And that trend is likely to stay in place, and you're going to lose even more money. So it doesn't work in your favor.
So what do? You rotate to strength, and sometimes strength is in cash, even at these low, virtually non-existent interest rates. But inflation drives interest rates higher. At least that's the normal process. We have inflation coming. People want a higher rate of return on their cash reserves. So rates go up. Fed's trying not to do that. Fed's playing games, trying to keep those rates from rising. But in the marketplace, there's still a tendency for that to happen. And if rising interest rates damages bonds, it's a teeter-totter. On one end are rates, on the other end are value. And as long as rates are falling, the value of your bond portfolio goes up. When that reverses, it's just like when you were a kid and you're brother or sister jumped off the low end of the teeter-totter and
bye
you
bye.
Went crashing you went crashing to the ground, and you just hope that they got hit in the chin with the rising end that they abandoned. That doesn't happens once in a while. But anyway, that the standard pablum.
And now that, we know why teeter-totters aren't in playgrounds anymore.
The standard pablum in the industry is let's just get your money under our management and hang on to it. And if you go shopping from advisor to advisor, the model's the same, but they just change the name of the fund that they put you in. But the model's the same. Unless you come to us or somebody else who's doing something similar to what we're doing, where you own leadership and you sell weakness, you rotate into strength, you get rid of things that aren't working. And that has to be a disciplined process, an evaluation of data, market-generated data, makes those decisions for you. You just simply don't ignore reality and pretend that everything will turn out okay. We're running out of time. June 5th is our next webinar. Sign up for it at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. We are out of time. Lord willing, we'll be back next week, and you have a great weekend.